Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 139. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. This isn't your father's Pennsylvania. It's more like your grandfather's grandfather's Pennsylvania. Today, on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have two news stories for you. The first one you may have already heard about. A lot of airlines have started to charge money for a second bag that's checked onto a flight. American Airlines has gone one step further. As of late last month, they've decided they're going to start charging for the first checked bag. That is, unless you are an elite frequent flyer, traveling first or business class, or buy a full fare ticket, they're going to be charging you $15 each way for your first piece of luggage and an additional $25 each way for your second piece of luggage. It is yet to be seen whether other airlines will follow American's lead or whether passengers will vote with their feet and fly someone else. Many of you are using online review sites to check out that hotel before you stay there and book your stay on the internet, and I certainly recommend you do that, but just so you know, one story came to my attention recently from a hotel owner who I mentioned on last week's show, Costas, who ran the hotel we stayed at in Santorini, is that some people are using the power of the review in a negative way to blackmail hotel owners. One particular story Costas told was going out of his way to help a particular person who was staying at their hotel and then having them turn around and blackmail him that if he didn't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to take them to the airport, which is not part of the package that they had bought, they were going to write a negative review. So as you do read online reviews, remember to take them with a grain of salt. Links to both these stories on the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Juliana, who's come to talk to us about Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. Juliana, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Juliana answered my call for people who could come on and talk about interesting U.S. domestic destinations, especially with the high cost of airfare. Not that Juliana, being a flight attendant, is trying to discourage us from flying, but I do appreciate that you come on to talk to us about Lancaster, which is a very different kind of destination. For somebody who may not have ever heard about it, tell us a little bit about why we would go to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Well, Lancaster, when I tell people that I'm from Lancaster, which is pronounced Lancaster, not Lancaster, sorry, that's a little thing that Lancastrians have. It needs to be said appropriately or the right way. But it's an Amish country. If you've ever seen the movie Witness with Harrison Ford, that was filmed in Lancaster. It's primarily Amish country. When I fly over Pennsylvania, particularly southeast Pennsylvania, it's also really beautiful landscape. There's some really beautiful sights there, the horse and buggies with the clothing out on the line and just the long, windy roads over the hills. It's just a really beautiful place to go see. And there's lots of arts and crafts and Amish-made furniture that's really good quality. So a lot of people like to go to Lancaster for a lot of that. I kind of look at it as being a mom-pa sort of place. Like, crafty and homey, I guess. But I guess that's also because it's my home. But but it's a very homey area.
Now, I think probably a lot of our listeners are familiar with the Amish, but we do have about 30% that are overseas who may not be as familiar. When you say it's an Amish country, who are the Amish?
Oh, the Amish. Oh, I could get into the whole religious aspect of it. But to sum it up, it's a very conservative group of Protestant Christians that decided to not join with the world when the world was changing. And so they are kind of stuck back in the 1800s. They live with no electricity. They have horse and buggies instead of cars. They don't use a few of them use cell phones, but we'll get into that later. they don't have telephones on their own property. They put their telephones on their neighbor's property. They're very plain people, and they're hard workers, and they're usually farmers or carpenters. They are very simple people. That's kind of the term that goes with it, is they're very simple people.
And when you say plain, you don't mean they're unattractive, but rather that they don't go into ostentatious displays. So
exactly.
A lot of black and white and clothing color choices and things like that.
Mm-hmm. They left the Anabaptist church. When buttons became a part of society, they decided that buttons are too progressive, too worldly. I don't know why, but that was some minister's decision, was that the buttons were a no-can-do thing. So all of their clothing have hook and eyes. They don't have any buttons or zippers or anything extravagant like that.
We talked a little bit about the area. When you lived there and people came to visit you, where did you go to see?
Well, we took them to a lot of places in town. Lap Valley Farm is the one thing that I love taking people to. It's an Amish farm, a dairy farm, and they sell ice cream that they make right there on site, and it's delicious ice cream. It's out in the middle of a cornfield. It's absolutely a beautiful drive to drive there. It's next to a one-room schoolhouse. They have all kinds of animals, so when you get your ice cream cone, you can go down and see the cows and the deer and I think they have peacocks and a few ostriches. The thing about the Amish people is that they're not allowed to show their wealth in material ways, but they are allowed to show their wealth by God's creatures. So they buy a lot of exotic animals. It's just another little trivia bit of information. So you might see a lot of exotic, unusual animals that you wouldn't expect to see on a farm in Pennsylvania. But the Amish people will have that if they have a lot of money.
Oh, interesting. That I didn't know. My dad actually worked for a company that was started by two Amish gardeners. So I know something about that, but you've stumped me there with that detail.
Yeah, I know a lot of useless information about the Amish.
Okay. Other places that you take people to see in that area?
There's Dutch Wonderland. If you have young children, Dutch Wonderland is a fabulous place to go. It's just got all kinds of kiddie rides and whatnot. Lancaster has some great outlet shopping. That's called Rockvale Square. Everyone in Pennsylvania knows Lancaster for their outlets.
And why did outlets end up in Amish country? Is there any relation?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Lancaster people from Lancaster are bargain hunters.
Okay.
So it's quite economical to eat and live and sleep in Lancaster, but it's also economical to buy things there. But because it is a very conservative area, alcoholic drinks are usually a lot more pricey. There's a lot more tax on stuff like that, and it's a lot harder to come by. But generally, everything else is fairly reasonably priced.
And you mentioned Dutch country. I assume one of the other names that the Amish often go by is the Pennsylvania Dutch, which of course is misleading because it's really Pennsylvania Deutsch.
Yeah.
It's really of German extraction, many of them. And
it's very true.
You want to mention anything about, as long as we're talking about Pennsylvania Dutch, there's a little different way of speaking often in the Pennsylvania Dutch or the Amish.
Yeah, the Amish have a language that if you go to their little stores, you'll hear them speaking in it. It's rooted in German, and it's mm-hmm. called Pennsylvania Dutch. And it's still alive and well in all their homes. They learn English when they go to school, which they only go to school until eighth grade. I don't know too much about it, but I do know that they can see some pretty nasty things in it. I've had friends tell me stories about what they've understood from the Amish people speaking, not thinking that anyone knew them. So German speakers, if you go there, you might hear an earful.
Well, and the other thing that they're known for then is that the English is sometimes constructed with German word order. Mm-hmm. And so the old throw the cow over the fence from hay is sort of traditional Pennsylvania Dutch or Amish that's coming from there.
If you ever talk to someone who is, I was born in Florida, my family's from other parts of the country, but people who are born and raised in like true blue Lancastonians, I don't have a word for us. I'll call us Lancastonians. Lancastonians, they do have a tendency that influences in their vocabulary. So they'll say out in the lights when they mean turn off the lights. And yeah, it's an interesting language that they have in Lancaster.
You were talking about that there is this frugal nature also.
Yes.
And the Amish actually stretch in the U.S. sort of from eastern Pennsylvania, where you're talking about, mm-hmm. on into Ohio. And we had some friends who lived in an area where some of their neighbors were Amish, just wonderful people. And one of them had a bakery. Mm-hmm. And they had these wonderful cookies and such. And they were told, well, you could go into Pittsburgh, because they were in the Pittsburgh area, and sell these for like a dollar each. And they're like, oh, no, that would be way too much money.
So the Amish think very differently when it comes to money. I was a waitress. They're very frugal when it comes to spending money or mm-hmm. getting money. But when I was a waitress, they would come in with their six children and take up my largest table, and they'd leave like $1.50 tip. And
well, they're tipping still from the 1800s, so that's actually a very very good tip.
So, they tend to be a little frugal. They also tend to be on the odorous side because they work in the fields all week, and they only bathe once a week, the night before church, which is Saturday night. They'd all take a bath.
We talked about hardworking crafts. It's the other thing that mm-hmm. you started to get into. What sort of crafts then are they known for, and what sort of things would you find in that area?
Two things that come to mind predominantly are the quilts. They have really mm-hmm. excellent quilts and quilt patterns. If you're a quilter and you are looking for patterns, you can go to Lancaster and find some. And they are also carpenters. So you can find really good tables and chairs and just basic wooden things that are really good quality. It's hard to find good quality nowadays, but they've still got that old mindset where they build things to last.
And usually often handcrafted.
Yeah, handcrafted and usually very beautiful. That's always something that people buy when they come to Lancaster.
Now, you've thrown out a couple things already that are surprising, but what would be the biggest surprise for somebody coming to that area?
They might be thrown off by the Mennonites.
Okay.
That they are also from the Anabaptist church, but mm-hmm. they're more liberal, and there's a wide range of Mennonites, and some of them look a lot like Amish people. So when I'm on an airplane, I'll see some Mennonites get on, and all my flying partners will be like, oh, there's some Amish people, and I have to explain, no, they're Mennonite. Mennonites can have horse and buggies, or they can look just like you and me. So there's a wide range of what they look mm-hmm. like. The horse and buggies are black. The buggy itself is black. And for Amish people, their buggy is gray. So that will help you pick it out.
Okay.
Yeah, that will help you pick out what's Amish on the roads. What else? The Mennonites are also allowed to wear florals and patterns on their dresses. So that's another distinguishing point. Their prayer bonnets are generally white, whereas Amish people have black prayer bonnets.
And as you said, there is a range of people in terms of their embracing of technology. I know when mm-hmm. I was living in Ohio, there were people nearby who were black bumper Mennonites, which means that was okay to buy a car, but not with all that chrome.
Yeah,
and so they would paint over the chrome because it's ostentatious.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. I was just about to touch on that, the black bumper Mennonites.
Okay.
And you'll see four or five different cars in their driveway because they have large families. All of them are black through and through, and they're too frivolous to have any color or the chrome. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other unusual things about the Lancaster area, or the Lancastrians or Lancastonians or whatever.
you'd expect to see it because they're Amish and they don't have tractors. But this is a kind of a funny story. I grew up with Amish men and their horses pulling plows through the fields. Mm-hmm. And when I'd go visit my family in Michigan, we'd drive through Ohio and I'd see a tractor for the first time. And I'm like, wow, it's a tractor, just like in the storybooks.
Sure.
Yeah, it's just there aren't many tractors around Lancaster. They're all horse and plow.
What were some of the more memorable people you knew growing up?
I never really talked with the Amish people because they don't talk to English people unless it's for business. Oh, that's something interesting about the Amish is that they refer to anyone who's not Amish as English. So you could be from the heart of Africa and you're still English. Get used to that.
One day that you can think of that was a quintessential Lancaster County day.
I'd say a day that I was in high school and I was driving to my favorite diner and we took all the back roads because it's always faster, avoiding the tourists. And I looked out and fog was kind of coming up and the farmhouses for the Amish people are just huge. And they'd have all these lines of clothing all in like large to small and kind of color coordinated down the line, very organized line of clothing out drying. And it's just beautiful. And for some reason, they all do their laundry on the same day. It's probably Saturday. I don't know. I've never taken note, but it's just beautiful. Go down these long back roads with the hills and seeing the lines of clothing out and the children out playing. And it's just that to me is exactly what Lancaster is.
And you mentioned just briefly the type of terrain we're talking about here. Want to give us a little more description? Paint us a little word picture?
It's rolling hills with farms. Okay, when I'm flying over the Midwest, everything's set up in squares and circles. But when you fly over Lancaster or Pennsylvania, things kind of move like a river would. So the plots of lands are not squares. They're kind of all different shapes and they're really beautiful. Like it kind of moves with the land. They have different crops growing in the field. So they're usually different colors and at different times of the year, they look different. So there's a lot of diversity when you're driving down the roads. We're not too far from the Poconos Mountains. So we're in like kind of the foothills. So it's hilly, like I've mentioned multiple times. And there's a few mountains, but they're not, I don't think they really qualify as mountains. They're just larger hills.
Well, it depends where you're from, whether they're mountains or hills. Yeah.
Yeah. We call the mountain, like it's over the mountain. She lived yonder over the mountain, but they're not really technically mountains.
No, I think the ones you call mountains out here in the West, we don't even name those. Those really are.
Exactly.
You said talked about avoiding the main roads because of the tourists, so it's a heavily touristed area. What do the tourists do that you think, gosh, I can't understand why they do that, it's a waste of time?
There is a stretch of land between, okay, everyone's going to giggle when they hear this, it's between Intercourse and Burden Hand.
Okay.
And it's a very heavily touristed area. It's Kitchen Kettle and Good and Plenty, and that's where all the Amish tourism is. So they'll have fake one-room schoolhouse and a fake covered bridge, and it's just for the tourists to kind of see. And I think that's a waste of time. I say just go and get lost with your GPS unit. Go and get lost on the back roads of Lancaster, and that's where you're going to see all of the really incredible sights.
And any particular place you would recommend to stay?
My mom's house? I don't know.
Okay. Well, just give me the address. We'll put that up there.
No, if you have money, a good place to go is Willow Valley. It's kind of the upscale place to go. And don't go in prom season because that's where all the high schools have their proms.
Okay. On the flip side, any good budget accommodations?
It's all pretty reasonably priced.
Okay.
There's no hostel in Lancaster because it generally attracts an older crowd.
Okay.
But there is still a younger underlying feeling in the city. The hotels, I was just pricing them out for my mom's wedding this coming week, and they're generally under $100.
Okay.
Depends on the time of year that you're going. summertime, it's about $100, maybe a little bit less. Oh, there is something. You can Google this. It's called like the Caboose Hotel, that some guy got a whole bunch of cabooses at an auction, and he didn't know what to do with them. It was a dare that he bought them. So he made them into hotel rooms.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So that's up in Strasbourg. There's a train station in Strasbourg that you can take a little train ride, and it's nice.
And this is an old steam train?
Yeah, an old steam train. And I went once when I was really little, but I don't really remember it, but I know a lot of tourists go there.
Okay.
If you go in the fall, there's the amazing maze.
A corn maze.
It's a lot of fun.
Okay.
So that might be something to do if you're going in the fall.
I just like the name maze, but anything particular you should eat when you're in Lancaster that is the typical?
Oh, the typical Lancaster food. Expect to gain a few pounds when you're there because they are very hearty. It's German-based food. Uh-huh. But they have this thing called a shoe fly pie.
Oh,
it's so fantastic.
Right, it's like
a molasses pie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sweet. Some people hate it. Some people love it. If you're from Lancaster, you love it. My roommates in San Francisco, they didn't like it so much. But I don't know. It's an acquired taste. There's also a whoopie pie. Those are really sweet.
And they serve that in intercourse, do they? But
yeah.
I have to edit out.
But the whoopie pies are these kind of cakey cookies that have sort of a whipped cream, but really heavy whipped cream in the middle. So it's like an Oreo, but bigger and heavier. And that's really sweet. I can only eat like half of one of those. What else? Chow chow. It's kind of a jarred vegetable medley, I guess. You can find that in Kitchen Kettle. There's also scrapple. I'm not sure if that reaches out beyond Lancaster, but pretty much anything they don't put in a hot dog, they will put in scrapple. And it's supposed to be delicious, but I've never gotten the nerve to eat it.
When you lived in Lancaster, was there one day you can think of that you thought, thank God I live in Lancaster, PA?
Oh, going up to Hershey.
Okay.
Hershey Park is like 45 minutes away from downtown Lancaster. I used to go there like 3 times every summer. Outside of Hershey Park, there's Hershey Chocolate World, where you can take a ride and they'll... You have?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's fun. It's quite delicious. The whole town smells like chocolate, but if you take this ride, it will take you through just the process of making chocolate. And then at the end of the ride, they give you a chocolate and then you go down and can buy whole slews of chocolate. Right next to it is Hershey Park, which has rides. It's just a standard amusement park, but instead of princesses and Mickey Mouse taking pictures with you, you have giant life-size chocolate bars taking pictures.
Yeah, the Hershey Chocolate World, they used to do tours of the factory back in the, I think, 60s. They built Hershey Chocolate World in the 70s, as I recall. I was there in 77 the first time. And the reason that they stopped doing that is there were enough tourists that the heat of the tourists was changing the chocolate.
Oh, wow. I never knew that. Good to know.
As we start to wrap this up, is there anything else we should know if we're going to do a trip to Lancaster County?
You have to go to Shady Maple Smorgasbord. You will probably eat about 10 pounds worth of food, but it is delicious.
So it's an all-you-can-eat?
It's an all-you-can-eat smorgasbord of true blue Lancaster food. So they have hush puppies and all kinds of food. I love going there for breakfast, but that's because I try and watch my weight, so I don't eat all the true Lancaster County food. But they have really great food. Their staff is a very nice staff. All my friends worked there in high school.
Well, thanks so much, Juliana, for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about your old hometown.
You're welcome.
Back before you started gallivanting around the world.
Yes, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
I have one internet resource that caught my eye this week, and that's that Lonely Planet will now sell you their guidebooks by the chapter. So if you happen to be going to Mexico, but you're only going to one particular city, you can actually go to their online store and buy a PDF version of just the chapter for the city you're interested in. So you might want to check out that link both in the show notes or in the enhanced iTunes version of the show. In the community news, I have two emails from you, an old one and a new one. The one I got back a while back from Richard. Said you mentioned in Amateur Traveler 113 that you were the youngest person aboard the Holland America cruise. I've done a lot of cruising with only one aboard a Holland America ship, the Verdam, and found it totally unacceptable for several reasons. First, the ship was relatively old by modern standards, smaller than modern ships and claustrophobic. I've been on Carnival, Royal Caribbean, and Princess ships and never had that experience. Also, Holland America is known for catering to an older crowd. Thus, my wife and I were also the youngest on the ship, which had an average age of 70 to 80 years old. I was 50 or so at the time I saw the ship in Alaskan waters a couple years ago, next to a much larger and more modern version by Holland America, along with several other cruise lines. We also did the Caribbean to Grand Cayman, which we couldn't get to due to weather, Jamaica, and Mexico. All I really wanted to see was Grand Cayman, which I still haven't seen. I took a Royal Caribbean cruise of the Caribbean in 2006 with a genealogy theme. I also took another themed genealogy cruise, Legacy Family Tree, in September 2007 aboard a Carnival ship. While the crowd was younger, as was my second Carnival cruise, I will likely avoid Carnival as well, as the friendliness of the staff in the Lido deck was less than acceptable. I tend to stick to Royal Caribbean and then Princess, as they are generally more to my liking. While I don't do water sports, I was impressed with the video podcast for several reasons. Remembering that I wrote many months ago about the quality of the video, this time I watched it on my newly purchased iPod Touch, and it was terrific, both in video quality and your expertise in playing with your new toy. Keep it up. And the new toy that Richard was referring to is my underwater video camera, which I used a while back for an episode of the Amateur Traveler Video Edition. I'm surprised that the Video Edition has become as popular as the Audio Edition. For those of you who haven't checked it out, there is also a newer high-resolution format for those watching on a computer or Apple TV, or even potentially on an iPod Touch or some of those things. And the next few versions of the Video Edition will cover the same cruise that Richard's referring to, including some more underwater video shots. I haven't used all the best ones yet. I did also get a letter from Gazim, who clarified the pronunciation of the country I kept calling Iran. He says it's pronounced I as in Indiana, I, and Ran as in run, so it's Iran. Thanks, Gazim, for that correction. And then he also mentions, don't forget to visit Persepolis. In Greece, it means the city of Persia. Or Tate Jamshid, which is located in Shiraz. If you would like to send some feedback to the show, as Richard and Gazim did, feel free to drop an email at host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more